What's up, everyone? It's me, Dr. Z. It's Sunday Zen. I don't know what that was. I just wanted to go live. I took a month off making videos. It was the best. Really cleansed out the system and just made space in my system to feel all the incredible amounts of anger and rage that I generally suppress. So I wanted to talk today a little bit about anger because, it's a really interesting emotion. It's an ancient emotion. It's a primal emotion. It's as old as my friend Ishwar Segebin says. His YouTube channel is Sense Without Mind. Definitely check him out. He's been on my show too. He says anger has been around as long as the sense of a separate self has. It's an ancient, very primitive defense emotion, boundary defense, and a sense of actually protecting the fundamental identity that you're a separate self navigating a world. And anger is the kind of mechanism to do that. So we'll get into it. But today, it's interesting, I'm able to simulcast to YouTube and Facebook Live. So I'll be pulling comments from both streams if I can figure out how the hell to make this work. Let me just make sure I have the ability to do this. Here we go. So here is YouTube. There's a bunch of people, Ruth and Juliet and Sarah and Evan Fox and Jana. And on Facebook, I just have to find your comments. Give me 1 second. Maybe I can pop them out. There we go. And here we are. Becky is here on Facebook, and I'm gonna make these big. Okay, so now that I have your comments and I know we're streaming, we can get started. So just the other day for March 1st, I was like, okay, I should probably do a YouTube video. I haven't made a video in a month. I'm getting a little antsy. I've kind of polished up the studio a bit. I feel like getting back in the game, right? Although during the last month, I seriously considered just fully retiring from the whole thing, because it just becomes more and more clear that the whole social media thing, making content, all of that is a trap. It's a trap on a conscious level. Like, you just know it. Oh, there's likes and there's views and there's this and there's that and there's revenue. And then on an unconscious level, it's a validation seeking mechanism. It's a dopamine seeking mechanism. It's like, oh, can I, you know, reach people? And you'll make all kinds of justifications for why you do it. Well, I get, people will tell me how much I've helped them and how great it was during COVID and the meditation stuff and the awakening stuff and this and that. And that's wonderful and beautiful and true. And it's lovely. It's actually beyond lovely. But the way that the residual ego structures will take that is, okay, either I'm a thing, which I don't feel that anymore, which is sad. Or I have to be a thing so I don't let people down. So it's an expectation thing. It's like folks won't get some benefit. They won't wake up, or we won't transform medicine, or we won't whatever, if I don't do my part in this way. And it's a kind of it's an expectation that you put on yourself that you think is due to external forces, but it never is. It's always your own perceptual stuff, like identity structures, conditioning, belief, personality, all it feeds into it. And YouTube, Facebook, all that is the perfect kind of catalyst for this kind of identity structuring. So what happened when I turned it off for a month and, you know, just let my right-hand lady, Risa, kind of manage posting different clips and old stuff and, you know, that kind of thing. Well, what I found is, like, in that silence, in that still space that opened up, you know, for the first time, I mean, I've been doing this in some form on YouTube since 2010. That's now 14 years. And I've never really stopped. And I've never really considered just completely ending it. So in the last month I did, and I stopped. And in that space that opened, it's interesting, rather than feeling more emptied out and more still and more peaceful and noticing the immediate not-to-ness of everything, without subject, without object, the empty radiance of this, which was very apparent prior, instead, what I found is I turned in And the personality structures, the conditioning, the residual identity structures, like this is who Zubin is, fired up to 10. Like, who am I sort of thing, right? Well, I know who I am, and anger shows up in all aspects of my life. Like these, you know, so people who like neighbors are like asking me for stuff and I'm tearing their heads off. Of course, they're completely wrong, but I'm tearing their heads off. You know, advisors that I've worked with over years, I'm like, you're done. And here's all the reasons why. And just anger, feeling it here, rage, actually. And no easy way to distract from it, because I can't go and just make a video about how I'm angry, like is what I would normally do. I kind of process it this way. So that wasn't there. So there's no way to distract. There's no way to go, oh, I bet someone else might benefit from what I'm going through. Let me go talk about it. I took that off the table because that aspect of my personality and identity needed to disappear for a while to see what's under there. And what's under there is the deepest defense mechanism against the disillusion of you. And it seems to be anger, rage, here, now. That's what it feels like. And so it shows up in all these different aspects over the last month. And it's really uncomfortable on one level, right? Because anger feels like it has this feeling and then, blah, 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 blah. But on another level, and my friend Ishwar helped me realize this actually, he asked me by text the other day, like, so why is it that you get angry? And he has a lot of experience with anger. And I said, well, you know, it's because I must be resisting what is. I must be putting some distance between experience. And he's like, no, it's not that. You get angry because you like it. And I initially was like, and he's like, you like it because there's nothing like the feeling of being like, I'm right, they're wrong. Because it is the deepest emotional defense of the ego against everything that it feels is separate. That's the whole thing. Ego is not a real thing. It's a process. It's a, you know, series of beliefs and thoughts and identities and ways of being trapped in thinking that make a separation between a perceived subject of experience, the you, and experience. And all that can collapse and you can just see it's just experience experiencing. And you're just a part of that. And in that sense, there is no you. And in another sense, you're everything. It's a deep paradox, right? But anger shows up and it's addictive. It's actually, what he said is right. You like it. The you that still thinks it's a separate self loves to get angry because, especially when it's been repressed for a long time. You know, like what this one person I had a call with, it was like, I've been repressing this dissatisfaction for years now, and now I get to express it. And man, it is a rush. It's an absolute to just be completely honest and push back and say your truth. Now, but here's the thing: it comes out as in this with this emotion of anger underlying it as this like boundary violation protection mechanism, like car alarm, like I'm angry because my boundaries have been violated. But when that's been happening for years and you're not honest, you're not authentic on an ongoing basis, you're not spontaneous, what ends up happening is it shows up as this like kind of rageful, you know, virtual wrath. And it feels very good in the moment. It's not even that it feels good. It's that it feels inevitable. You can't stop it. You can't resist it. You can't control it. And I can see why in many throughout the world, this is so unconscious and it shows up as physical violence or as state on state violence, as violence in general, emotional violence, verbal violence, physical violence. Spiritual violence is the best. That we can talk about maybe later because that's a whole scam too. Right? But scam meaning it's another identity structure, the spiritual ego. So this anger had been showing up and it feels good in the moment. And then afterwards, it's funny, the bottom drops out. This is how it is here. So you express all this anger and then later you're just like, what the hell? Like, what did I do? And that's where other sort of primitive conditioning shows up for me, the conditioning of, oh, conflict if you induce conflict, it means that you're not going to be safe. And so this feeling of like, oh my God, I've ruined everything shows up. Then there's the feeling from just going down the awakening path, whatever that is, realization, seeing more and more clearly what reality is that everything is made, is just one. Everything is love. So when behavior arises that seemingly hurts someone else, it's felt right here, like as a friction, like it's not okay. And there's a kind of there's a natural movement to course correct it. That's natural compassion that arises. You don't think about it. You don't try to do it. It shows up as, it feels really bad. And so then you do take course, you do something. You may say, hey, listen, that was all about me. That was not about you. That anger was self-anger because I should have been clear over years or whatever it is. And you try to sort of self-correct. And that happens. And it happens naturally if you're aware. I think the point here is when we allow these kind of things to happen unconsciously, they're unexamined, they're unfelt, they're repressed, they're distanced from, stories are told about it. The standard human mind identified state that we're talking about here on this show as a way we're trying to see through that state, to notice how it functions, and then function from actual spontaneity, from actual reality, from presence, from being, and from what actually being arises from, which can't be spoken. So for me, this last month has been this journey of anger, really, of identity, of those deeper identity structures that are triggered. And that's why it felt, and you guys may have gone through this, it feels like you're less awake, less enlightened, less present than you have ever been. Because those deeper identities are so, the anger is one thing, so it creates a sense of identity in the one who is right and the others who have wronged. And then even the after effects of like, oh, I feel terrible. Oh God, why is that? Oh, all the conditioning that allows you that teaches you to be conflict averse, to paper over disagreements, to avoid these kind of things, at least in this case, show up and they create sense. That's a deeper identity that was probably conditioned as a child. So all of that then leads to this feeling of contraction. So does that mean that there's been backsliding, that like this whole thing is hopeless? Because it can feel like that. It certainly felt like that here at times. I was like, why am I even doing this? And why would I ever open my mouth about realization or the nature of reality or enlightenment or any of that shit? Why would I open my mouth about it when I can't even control my own anger? And then it's seen, ooh, wait, now this is it. This is part of it. This is part of the, what some people call shadow work, emotion work. Like this is it. All of it has to go back and be felt and processed and seen. It has to. Awareness just goes back for everything. So the other day, my first video back, I did a live vertical video to try out YouTube's new vertical video thing. It's on YouTube. It's called McMindfulness, because I just read something popped up in my feed by Ron Purser about McMindfulness, this idea that like corporate America has hijacked awakening and meditation and Eastern religion and tried to make it another thing that they say, well, see, now you're not burned out so you can work harder because you meditate, right? You're welcome. It's fucking horseshit, right? But I read the article and I got so mad because I felt it. And it was talking also, there was other stuff talking about Jay Shetty, the big influencer, Indian guy who, fellow Indian guy, who has made millions of dollars, millions of followers, kind of repackaging this, McMindfulness type of talk with celebrities and all that. And it turns out, oh, he's not quite honest about his history as a monk. He's not quite, he plagiarizes. Like these were the accusations, right? The allegations. And so that made me really mad because I've always, whenever I'd seen people like that, it's weird. I have this attunement. People say this about me. They say, they see me once and they think I'm a total fraud. They turn me off. They just feel like I'm a grifter. And well, I can tell you, and I'm going to say this, I'm not a grifter, but then again, maybe there's an aspect of my personality that projects that, or maybe there's something unconscious where I am trying to get some secondary gain out of this, right? And they're picking up on that. Well, when I see someone like Jay Shetty or Deepak Chopra or one of these guys, I feel it right, or Sadhguru, I feel it right away. I'm like, fraud. whereas then I can watch others on YouTube, you know, Angelo or Lisa Carnes or Suzanne or Ishwar or my friend Simon, these other people that even if I don't know them personally, I can see it and go, there's authenticity there. Like there's deep truth there and they're working on their shit, right? They're not trying to sell us a bill of goods. So you can feel it, right? So I read this article. I remembered my feeling with Jay Shetty, anger, self-righteousness, irritation, and also under that, a little bit of self like analysis, like, well, do I do that? Am I that guy? Like, yeah, I give talks for lots of money or used to. Am I like a fraud too? Like trying to repackage some shit and sell it? And it didn't feel good to do that self-reflection, but that just led to the this more emotional kind of state of like, argh. So then when I did the live video, I was just like ranting and raving about that whole thing. You know, there's a taboo in these spiritual circles, which by the way, I'm not in. I'm just going to say that not in meaning I don't want to be in them. I don't want to. I'm not. I'm a doctor. I'm me. I don't even know what spiritual means. I really don't. We use it because we don't have a better word. Sam Harris has said this, like there's no better word for what this is, but really it's just reality. It's just trying to find out what we are, what this is, and then how to end suffering for ourselves and others. That's it. Call it spirituality or call it, you know, Tom Dickery. I don't care what it is. But in these kind of classic spiritual circles, like, you know, it just feels like there's so much of this trying to sell authority and trying to sell this kind of spiritual perfectionism and all that. And it feels like bullshit. So when I did the video, I really ranted and raved about that whole thing. And in spiritual circles, it's taboo to name names. You know, if you're a big enlightened non-dual guru, you don't go out there and go, Jay Shetty is a fucking fraud. You don't do that. That's just not done. And they'll give you reasons for this. So Jeff Foster has said things like, why would you criticize another teacher when that is in itself taking a stance? And reality itself has no stance. It accommodates all stances. So when you criticize another teacher, you're criticizing them as a person, as a separate individual, not as what reality is. Well, that's fine. So when you do that, you do it as, I do it as Zubin. And honestly, I've made many videos criticizing many, many things, many people, many approaches over the years, including during COVID and especially during COVID and prior to COVID and our healthcare system and all the other stuff. And so that anger came out in that video. And it's funny, I got two types of messages, which I thought both were spot on. One was, thank God you told that one person to go fuck off and Jay Shetty is a fraud and someone needs to say this and thanks for being so honest and authentic. Okay, all that's true. I was being absolutely honest, completely authentic, and also totally a person, which is fine. It's because the human instantiation, this, all of this, the delusion, the separate self sense, the anger, the conditioning, the unconsciousness, that is also reality showing up. It's not separate from the absolute truth of empty, radiant presence. They're the same thing. And this cannot be understood by the dualizing mind that has to make things into opposites, but it is the truth. With a capital T. So that was true. Then the other type of email I got was, it's actually just beautiful emails, very thoughtful and respectful saying, hey, I watch your show. I love how you talk about awakening and stuff. Doesn't what you just did seem the opposite of what you've been talking about? You've taken a stance, you're creating division, you're naming names, and you're criticizing a person instead of criticizing a behavior. And all of that is true. All of that is absolutely true. And so both those aspects are true. So the anger aspect and then the truth of like, wow, but in reality, like, this is all love. This is all, there's no separation. There's no division anywhere. So how do we square those? We don't. We don't have to. We don't have to do anything. We just rest in reality. And even that is just automatic. It's just happening. Now, this is not to make an excuse and go, oh, you screw up. You should apologize. You should do this. You should explain yourself. No, How do I say this? This, all of this is it. Now, if anything, you could say, try to see it that way. Try to see it. I mean, if anything, awakening is just presence waking up to see what's happening as itself. It was never asleep. Nobody wakes up. It's just a kind of a click. So then when these kind of things arise, you don't beat yourself up. You don't go, I'm hopeless. I mean, those are thoughts will arise. Absolutely. You can recognize them as thoughts. That's true. But you recognize what's going on. You go, yeah, this is the human thing. This is maybe why even it happens. It doesn't really matter why, but it is happening. So then what happens? A natural realignment, a natural balance between form and emptiness, between the human aspect with all its conditioning and what it arises in and as, which is not describable, infinite, timeless. And if you think it's somewhere else, that's a thought. It's this, now, here, you and I together. Let's look at some some comments because they're streaming by. Hey, sorry to interrupt this episode. It's Dr. Z. Just a quick pitch here. If you can just leave a review and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform, it helps us a lot. I also want to hear what you think about this episode when you're done listening. hello@zdogmd.com. It's the best way for me to hear your voice because the emails come right to me. And we don't have a comment section on most podcast platforms. Maybe Spotify has one, but nobody else does. So it really gets your voice involved on episodes, especially that don't have a video. And the third thing is, if you want to be a part of this community and support the show, join our supporter tribe, zdogmd.com/supporters. You can join on YouTube, Locals, Facebook, Instagram. You get live videos with me where we're talking about these things in depth, uncensored, and your comments are fully incorporated as in real time. And then we do these Zoom meetings where it's really like a beautiful community where we share our experiences on the awakening journeyless journey. How are we going to transform ourselves so we can transform healthcare and education and government? Because those systems are epiphenomena of us. Until we wake up, those systems will stay asleep. They're just an expression of our own delusion. So being a part of that, it supports this message so others can hear it. And it also allows for our own collective growth. So we need each other in that way. It's really, really, really tightly interwoven and interdependent. That's it. Back to your regularly scheduled show. Michelle says, what about finding synthesis within the polarities on Facebook? So synthesis within the polarities is thought. So you can say there's two sides. Let's find a kind of an alt-middle approach that integrates truth from both sides and finds a middle solution. Beautiful. But that's still in the realm of polarity. It's still in the realm of dualistic thought. It's still a solution to a problem. In reality, there are no problems. There's only this. But both are true. So yes, you can do that. Now, when the Buddhists talk about the middle way, this is a very tricky thing to talk about. Angela talks about this very well. The middle way is actually, one way of thinking about it is freedom from extremes. So you're not always mind identified and human identified, and you're not always just in this empty transcendent state. You realize the middle way is realizing both are true simultaneously, and the mind will never understand or hold that. So you hold it as being itself. And that is a kind of release into what is. It's a complete unconditional surrender into what is, which is just this. Just this. No labels, nothing, just this. Thoughts are arising, great. Identity shows up, wonderful. That's beyond synthesis because mind isn't doing it. Nothing's doing it. Life is doing it. That's one way to say it. And we can't really say it. Looking through some comments here. Emily says, I feel like we're all walking this life together and trying to figure it out. You never ever acted like you had all the answers. You never claimed to be a shaman. You just have presented thoughts. Yeah, well, thank you, Emily. But I would say that like when I make a video like that one, felt really good at the time and it's authentic. And I encourage you to watch it because you get a sense of how I feel about that stuff, how this feels about that, if you care. But remember when I said earlier, there's this natural tendency to find that middle way that starts to arise. And this is hopefully an expression of that tendency. So I'm trying to see like, okay, what's been going on the last month? What are these things? What did I do with this video? Where's the reactivity? What does it mean? And some of that is a lot of thought. So you can overthink this stuff. And some of it is just sitting in meditation, which isn't even meditation anymore. I mean, what does that even mean? Everything is kind of meditation. And you're just sitting in presence, feeling what arises. So if the thoughts about this arise, great. Like right now, I didn't really have a plan of what I was going to talk about. I just started talking and this is what's coming out. This is what's expressing. And it feels correct. Now, if I think about it afterwards, or I go back and watch it, I'm often like, what? I don't know about that. Because it's a different now. So that's why I find I often don't watch back my old stuff. It causes a lot of thinking, like a lot of thought and analysis. And that's not what this is. It's just, it just comes out. That's why I like live video. It really is. I don't do a lot of pre-record videos anymore. Diana in Lisbon says, the middle way is what you arrive at in the gap. So this is the thing. I don't know. The middle way is a way of speaking about something that's hard to talk about, which is holding the paradox of being and becoming, holding the paradox of emptiness and form, holding the paradox of being a human and transcending, holding the paradox of an eternal no thing and a transient this thing, and knowing that they're not separate at all. And so therefore not staying fixated in any one extreme. And the way I'm talking about it now still doesn't quite capture the middle way. But it's directionally, I think, correct. Let's see. Mandy says on Facebook, I'm angry my mom allows my brother who molested me to record my children. She denies she did it. Oh my goodness. So how is this a me thing when it sounds like what they want, which is to sweep it under the rug? Okay, so what you're pointing at is some terrible thing that's happened in your family that is apparent others and you in relationship. So this is where the middle way shows up. You can't tell Mandy, your mom and your brother and all that, they're not real. They're figments of a reality telling you you're separate from others, but it's just reality and it's perfect and you have no agency at all. You have no free will. You can't do anything about it. So just let it play out and everything will be okay. Stop worrying about it. Don't believe your thoughts, all of that. Okay, so that's what one extreme would say. The like radical non-dual, like everything is emptiness. Shut the hell up about your personal story. Realize it's a story, let it go, and you're free. Okay, how's that working out? How does that work out in practice? Even that is taking a stance, saying there's no personal story. It's not that you're impersonal. It's as Jeff Foster says, it's that you're anti-personal. You're taking a position against the personal, against the self. Oh, I couldn't hang out with a person because they're so mind-identified. So for Mandy, it's like, well, no, there's a lot that needs to occur here. Therapy, police, whatever it is, in addition to recognizing the empty nature of all of it, the perfection of all of it simultaneously. So you act in the world and maybe anger drives some of that. Maybe that primitive emotion of anger is what gets you out of the chair and motivates this is hard to talk about because we're not really doing this. But it feels like we are. And in that sense, it's as real as anything. Only my family can break through my do not disturb. And it's my dad. So I don't think it's an emergency. It's probably, let's see actually. Oh, what is that? Oh, that's awesome. Very cool. I sent them an iMac that I used to. So I had this iMac, this 27-inch iMac that we were running in our studio for years. It was running the show, and I tried to auction it off to supporters, and then people wanted it for free, and then they flaked and never showed up. And I was like, "What am I doing?" I called up my dad, and I'm like, "Do you guys need another computer for my nephews and stuff?" And he's like, "Yeah." I'm like, "Well, let me mail it to you." So I finally got off my ass and mailed it, and they just sent a picture of my nephew using this computer. It's awesome. It's real satisfying because that computer has a lot of history with this show. I mean, we were using it in Las Vegas to like run the show, and now it's in the next generation, Gen Alpha. So back to Mandy. So yeah, there's a lot that seemingly you can do, and the illusion of actual doership is real enough that it's real. And at the same time, we're not doing anything. This is all unfolding. Forgive yourself, forgive them, but you still have to do the right thing. That's going to arise. And your emotions will help trigger to some extent that arising. But the more clear you are, the more clear there's a seeing of the mechanism of this, of how this is going down, of the empty nature of it, in a sense, that it's not real in the way we think. It allows for an opening into spontaneity, into action that can be quite righteous. Righteous meaning based on real activism, like I need to help others, or I need to prevent this from happening again, or I need to stand up against people who are pushing on me. And that is part of this. That is absolutely the expression of life showing up. The problem again is when we fixate in one or the other. Woe is me, I'm the victim, everybody, these people are terrible, da 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 da. Well, if you don't know the actual non-dual, empty, radiant perfection of reality by going and meditating and going reading a book or finding the right video or just being open to it. And even that you're not doing, it's kind of like you're, so it's very hard to talk about. But if you don't have that, it's just pure suffering. It's pure mind identification. So the middle way is kind of one way of thinking about it. And I don't know if Buddha meant it this way. It doesn't really matter what he meant. It's what we care about now, is again, knowing both, not knowing intellectually, knowing experientially, knowing in your marrow that both are simultaneously true. Anne says, clear sense, clear seeing leads to right action no matter what the situation. I think this is true. Clear seeing meaning you're awake in that way. You're knowing these truths as clearly as you can and noticing even when you've not seen. And then right action just follows. It really does. It really does. You don't have to think about it as much anyways. Let's see. So I'm just pulling up the comments here. It's kind of nice to be able to simulcast to Facebook and YouTube because we double the pool of comments and it's just very nice. Let's scroll down. Venus, who is a supporter, which by the way, if you like to support the show, join our supporter tribe. I've felt a little guilty because over the last month, I've only done a couple live things with my supporters because I've just been trying to pull back from doing anything in that way. But there's such a lovely group of humans and they're so aligned and it's more a community, you know, than me doing anything. So it is a beautiful thing. If you want to do that, just go to like zdogmd.com/supporters. See, when I say something like that, immediately I feel like, okay, this feels grifty. Like if I were watching this, I'd be like, this guy's a grifter. But I got, you know, keep the lights on and create a community. That's why we do it. Venus says a lot of spiritual stuff is now being branded as privileged and doesn't apply to people who have really deep life struggle. So Venus, let's talk about this. Because that's how it's branded by people who say, oh, this is like first world stuff, you can meditate, you have time to meditate, you have time to do introspection, you have time to undergo the looking for awakening. But I've talked about this before, the opposite is true. People who have the deepest life struggle, who've suffered the most, tend to wake up the fastest. They don't have to, you don't have to fucking pay a guru. You don't have to pay a transcendental meditation fee to wake up. You don't have to believe anyone. In fact, you have to allow yourself to recognize that all belief is just thought, that no belief is fundamentally true, only relatively true. And anyone can do that. And in fact, in the experience of many, it's people who've been through the worst stuff that tend to wake up and have these fundamental shifts. Now, this is where the McMindfulness comes in, that Western society has co-opted this whole thing and has turned it into another attainment, another piece of flair you put on your work outfit. And that's where it can seem like, well, only people who are privileged get to go to these, you know, fancy retreats and use the essential oils and get to talk to Deepak Chopra and get to pay $7,000 for Jay Shetty's life coaching course. You know what I mean? Well, then see that, then that was part of my sort of indignation the other day, is like, that's not what this is. This is you basically allow yourself on some level to die. And that is not an act of privilege. That's an act of surrender. And in a sense, when life makes you feel like you're getting killed every single day, the surrender can actually be easier. I can speak for here. You know, I've worked hard most of my life. There are times when I've slacked a lot, but I've worked pretty hard to go through what I've gone through. And I've had a lot of privilege too. I have two parents who supported me unconditionally. And, you know, yeah, growing up was a little, had its dicey moments for sure. And yeah, there was different traumas and things like that. But on the whole, been pretty freaking privileged myself. And it, currently I'm at an echelon in society where, yeah, it's a privileged echelon. Okay. Well, that said, it makes it actually much harder to let go of all that, because you feel all this and you go, it's still empty. It still has no, there's no lasting satisfaction in anything. And that's a driver, that and the desire to know what is true. But man, when you're suffering a lot, when you've been through a lot of trauma and you can get some help to manage some of those so that you're in a place where you can now just dive in, like there's no wanting to hold on in that way. To the life you had. And there's a little bit more natural tendency to awaken or die, really, is how it feels for some people. They've said that. They're like, man, it's see realization, realize truth, or I can't live like this. So it can feel like that. Yeah. Yeah, see, Zecton says, oh, come on. It's got to help tremendously to be able to fly out to any retreat you decide to attend. Or Angelo's retreat, Suzanne coming to the house helped tremendously, and she's not coming to my pad. So these are beautiful comments. So this is directed at me, right? It's like, well, you can fly out and go to the retreats. You know these people personally. You know, you've spent time with Suzanne. You spent time with Ishwar, right? All that's true. So... and I know where, I know the place where that's coming from. It's a place of frustration. Like you might see something where it's like, I want that clarity or realization, or I want to wake up, or I want to be free from suffering. And this guy has all the advantages, right? And I don't, so I'll never wake up. So I'm going to be super blunt. That's a total fabrication, a story and a fabrication of your mind. I can tell you now, for the first 10 years of me struggling on this path, I had no help. I had no retreats. I was just reading, watching videos, reading, meditating, doing it myself, in between having a full-time plus job and traveling around doing talks on something else, living my life. And that 10 years was the rocket fuel, actually, that helped start to dissolve these fixations and start to see clearly. Then when the student is ready, the teacher appears. That's just how it is. And then everything accelerated. But even then, I could tell you, despite all of this, I went through this last month where it's like, I'm not awake at all. I have no clue. Like, I feel as much as a separate person as I ever have. And even meditation was just strong emotion coming up. That's it. Nothing else. Just strong emotion. And boy, that doesn't feel very privileged. So I think this is all mental gymnastics that we create. I've said the same thing. Man, if only I had a teacher. If only I could go to a retreat. If only I could do this. And it's like, it's all bullshit. It's all the story that the mind tells that of course it's going to tell because it is asleepness. Thought is the dream. Thought is the cageless cage that we create around ourselves. So I totally get the spirit in which your comment is coming from. And at some points in my life, I would have actually agreed with it. Now, kind of from here, it's kind of like, stop making excuses. And I'm telling myself too, stop making excuses that you're too privileged to wake up. Because that's an excuse that I've made. Oh man, things are good. I got enough money that I don't worry about being on the street. I have influence, which you could call fame on some level. I get recognized on the street. In restaurants, like managers recognize me. Like, wow, it's what every human thinks they want on some level. I have it. Well, so would I give it up to destroy my entire identity? And so the mind says, no, you don't want to do that. But the heart says, all of that's meaningless. It's never made you happy. All that's made you happy is feeling connected to truth, which is often being connected to others. So what are you doing? See, these games the mind plays, and it's so sneaky because our mind and our ego know us better than we know ourselves. Because they make us think they are ourselves. They speak in our voice. The thoughts in your head speak in your voice. What the fuck is that? We would call that schizophrenia. Oh, these voices in my head. What's the difference? Maria says, some people become liberated in prison. Space and no privilege or retreat can help. Yeah, there you go. It is a lot of times solitude that can do it. Yeah, George Shepard says, back in the 90s, there were only books. I remember that. Danielle says, we acted ourselves into the poor me starring role in our own play, which is life. That's beautiful, Danielle. We acted ourselves into the poor me starring role. That's it. I do it myself. Debbie says, your thoughts on my going into dementia states and feeling my connection to spirit fades and my physical is present and brain is mush more often and my inner soul never loses, but my human mind feels differently. Not sure this makes sense. Let me interpret what you're saying, because this sometimes happens. The mental faculties that we're used to when we're young that are so sharp and intelligent and quick-witted, those fade. They do. I turned 50. I'm going to be 51 next month. It's like, I'm telling you, it gets softer. Memory gets a little dicey. And on the realization path, memory really starts to drop off because your identification with thought starts to loosen. And so you're no longer so much in thought that you're forming these kind of memories in this way. And so things are very present and they fall away. They're very impermanent. So memory becomes very dicey to the point where Adyashanti has said he knows a lot of people who get tested for dementia after awakening. That's not a real sales pitch, is it? For the mind. But for truth, it's like, yeah, what a relief that you're not living in the past. Yeah, sure, you don't know where your keys are, but there are worse things. So that kind of fogginess can make you feel, it can be very disconcerting, but I think you're pointing at there's a deeper knowing that it's all okay. And so if you actually had dementia, how would that be? Well, we can't say because maybe we don't have it, right? But what is that like? Is the person with dementia who's very clear, has this realization, what's their experience? We can't know. But I suspect it's not what you can think. What happens when thought drops away? Many people have loved ones with advanced dementia. They'll say, boy, they're really present. And I'm not trying to sugarcoat dementia. Please don't get me wrong. John says, what gets me through the most is that while I was ripped out to sea, two of my best friends drowned. Ooh. The despair of med school killed them. So having some kind of gratitude keeps to keep going, right? Because John had two colleagues die by suicide. I know from a previous conversation online or on one of our shows. And so having some kind of gratitude to keep going. And so how do you get past something like that? There's guilt, there's shame, there's trauma. There's the separate self alone. We're talking about the middle way and anger and these kind of things. The separate self alone can't bear this. So it generates all kinds of subterfuge, all kinds of escape into thought, into story, into projection, denial, anger, shame, all that. But then there's another side, which is pure gratitude, empty compassion, radiance, love, no thingness. That is everythingness. That is the ground of everythingness. That makes everythingness and no thingness possible. There's that. And that's equally this. So nothing is unbearable from that perspective. So the middle way says, I'll feel this pain and this hurt fully. And I know there's an infinite support and gratitude underlying. Yeah. There's no such thing as a negative emotion, by the way. We try to avoid these emotions, then you can't. They'll show up in some way, passive aggressive in some way. So feel everything. Oh, thank you, John. Zyla says, my housemate needing anger management during gameplay could use some. I hate that madness and toxic noise. Well, again, it's anger is the deepest, one of the deepest. Actually, you know, on a superficial level, yeah, it shows up like that. But on a deeper level, anger can be so beautiful when it's seen clearly. Because a lot of times underneath anger is a kind of sorrow too, that you're raging against. Like you're just sad about something and anger is showing up. And sometimes it is boundary protection. And sometimes it is just an addiction. The separate self loves to be right. It loves to get angry because it feels powerful. It feels in control. It feels more separate, which is what it wants. Actually, what it secretly wants is to dissolve separation, but it can't. Because it is the generator of separation, the ego. Ryan says, Dr. Z, what are your thoughts on voodoo death and how strongly held belief or fear can so materialize that the brain will place the person in such an immunocompromised state that death occurs? Well, I don't know anything about voodoo death, but I know that it's body-mind, not mind and body. It's one expression. So there's really no distinction between the physical and the mental in that sense. Now, that doesn't mean you go and believe everyone who's talking about manifestation and the secret and all of that. It means that nothing surprises me when it comes to the mind-body continuum. They are one thing. The placebo effect is a good example of that. We poorly understand it, but it is just this. Everything in our experience is in consciousness, in human consciousness, in thought reflection. So anything's possible in that sense. Now, that doesn't mean you go out and try to, you know, do these things or seek them, because that's another identification. All of it is empty of substance, ultimately, even consciousness. This is something that for me has been a shift. Early on this path, you know, when I would talk to Donald Hoffman and we would say everything is consciousness and here's scientific formula for why that might be and how it fits much better than saying everything is material and consciousness emerges from a material. In those days, I thought, yeah, so everything is consciousness interacting with itself. That's great. That's another identity. I am consciousness. So what happens when even consciousness blinks out and there's nothing but that nothing is still, you can't think about this. It's beyond conscious thought. It's beyond the stuff thought is made out of. It is the unborn potentiality of existence and non-existence. And that's more truly what you are. And that's not consciousness, even though it's awakeness. So in a sense, awakening is dying into that in a flash and recognizing, oh, and then identity can shift. It can shift to feel like you're this spacious awakeness. But even that is another sort of temporary fixation on the unfolding. And that's why some people will say, well, absolutely nothing is happening. Nothing has ever happened. Even consciousness is an appearance. It's another zero distance sense phenomena. It's the sixth sense. And so what are you really? Can't say it. Can't talk about it, but you can be it. This potentiality. You can feel it too. You can't talk about it, you can't describe it, but it's here, never hasn't been, isn't in time and space. You see, you really, this is where sitting and looking, feeling, not believing your thoughts, letting them be. And the deepest truth is right here. It's nowhere else. It's right now. It doesn't happen in the future. It doesn't happen in time. It doesn't happen. It is. It is isness itself. And see, when I talk like this, I can see, my mind can project, okay, this is how I would think about that statement 5 years ago. This guy's a woo-woo piece of shit and total grifter. It's just what it is. Just what it is. Sandra says, so the trick is to talk abstractly so you don't have to deal with all the dirty details of life. Nice comment. Nice criticism. Boy, I wish that were true, that I could just talk like this and then avoid life. It doesn't work like that. It seems here I've had to feel parts of life that I thought I would never have to feel. Horrible, painful, terrible things. And I still have to deal with everything, still have to deal with life. Can't escape, because that's not the middle way. That's taking a fixated position in emptiness, say. And so usually someone who, like Sandra, will come in and say, oh, so you're just trying to avoid life. And it's like, I think what I've been saying is the opposite. You have to inhabit life so fully that you feel all of it, including the anger and the shame and the this and the that. You're going to do these things. You're going to accidentally hurt others. And then you're going to feel into that and go, okay, I have to course correct. It just happens naturally. And that is living life. That's allowing life to live you, really, is what it is. Because Sandra, you may think you're in control of this, and that is a beautiful, solid feeling illusion until it isn't. That's all I'll say. I'll let it go at that. Emily says, what do you think of when you think about that in about three generations, no one will know who you were or care. It doesn't matter. A fiddler's fuck. What is upsetting you? Let it go. Dude, nobody cares now. That's what's beautiful. Yeah, Zelinda, that is simply being. And actually, it's even beyond being and non-being. And it's hard to talk. Can't talk about it. Karen says, wait till you're 77. The past is exactly that, the past. Grateful for the day where I'm not a burden with the future of the past or the past. Yeah. Well, the older we get, like it happens naturally. I think there's a little more not giving a fuck about stuff, a little more presence. Yeah. Secret Owl says, can we change the subject? Cool. What do you want to talk about? Let's finish on a different subject. Ask me anything. Preferably not something non-duality or reality-based, and we'll talk about it. Otherwise, let me know how you think. How's the streaming quality? Is it good? because I'm going to two different things and the computer has to work twice as hard, but it seems to work. Let's see. Okay. Well, it looks like we may be out of material. People are asking some good non-duality realization questions, but we were going to change the subject. So I think we'll change the subject to ending the show this time. Oh, there it is, Sarah. Pineapple on pizza. Yes, I'm a huge fan. I know people hate it. Me and my family love it. I like the contrast of the sweet, the tangy, and the savory together. It always is my favorite sort of vibe. All right. I think we're good. I'm glad you like the mic, Christopher. Yeah, this mic has now grown on me. It's my new favorite thing. It's just so ASMR-y, you know? So this mic, yeah, I bought it years ago when I was doing a lot of music parodies, and it's like a multi-$1,000 mic. And at the time, we had these, you know, big sponsorships and stuff, so we could buy all this cool equipment. And I dug it out of the closet, and I'm like, how did I forget that? Talk about privilege. How did I forget I had this mic? And I thought I couldn't use it here because it picks up a lot of external sound. So I just kind of re-insulated and did some trickery in the software that kills some background sound. And now it just, it really is a good sounding mic. It's better than the SM7, which I use still for the guest. But most people can't tell the difference. But people who do really, really enjoy it. Jody says, are you comfortable with raising your girls now easier? Raising girls is never easy, Jody, but I'd say it's beautiful. There's a naturalness and a spontaneity, and also holding it very lightly. They are not my girls anymore. They are just life expressing, and I love them unconditionally. And it's pretty swell, actually, to see them grow up. It really is. Yeah, it's strange. I would think it gets harder and harder, but it seems to get easier and easier because they're good girls. I mean, and even if they weren't, I don't think it would really matter, you know, because they're showing up exactly as they are. Okay. Glad to hang out with all y'all. Let's see. We got like 112 folks on Facebook and like 94 on YouTube. It was around 100. That's good. So we have a nice little group of a couple hundred people hanging out on a Sunday for Sunday's End. Maybe I'll put this up on our audio podcast. Remember, we do have the audio podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your audio stuff. If you go there, subscribe to it, because it's really kind of nice to listen only sometimes. It takes away one more sense field, and it allows you to kind of drop into it a little bit, especially if you're on your way to work or you're in the gym or something where you've got some AirPods or earphones in and you're hearing it. If you go there, subscribe and leave a review, because it really does help the podcast get more ears out in the world, if you care about that. And then if you want to join our supporter tribe to support the show and get access to these live videos, YouTube, Facebook, Locals, and Instagram are our supporter tribes. You just sign up where you're most comfortable, and we try to go to each at some point. And sometimes I'll just go to YouTube and share an unlisted link with our supporters so they can watch on all the different platforms. All right, guys, I love you so much for this video. And I have to ask this, because if I don't, then people don't do it and the video never doesn't get watched at all, which actually doesn't matter. But if we can do little things as a community to help get something that you think is useful in front of other eyeballs, it's always helpful. Just smash the little like button and subscribe to the YouTube channel if you don't mind. And on Facebook too, just hit like, leave a comment. It really helps the algorithm feel like, oh, people care about this content, because you do. If you don't, hey, ditch it, man. And I'll see you next time. All right, love you. Bye, YouTube. And bye, Facebook. Hey, it's Dr. Z. Thanks for getting through the whole episode. That's a huge accomplishment. And so at this point, I just got to ask you for a few favors, because it just helps us so much if you leave a review on your favorite podcast platform and subscribe. it just really helps the algorithms to get this message out to others. The second thing is email me, hello@zdogmd.com. I get all these emails personally. I can't respond to them all, but I need to hear your voice because especially on podcast, we don't have a comment section. And I want to hear how this episode affected you, what you'd like to hear in the future, what you think we got wrong, what we think we got right, anything, or just say hi. So that's really powerful. And the third thing is, financially, it helps us a lot to support the show in any way you can. And if you go to zdogmd.com/supporters, you can join our supporter tribe on your favorite platform, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, wherever. What that will get you on those platforms is live shows with me that are exclusive for supporters and access to our Zoom meetings where we talk about awakening realization and we share with each other our own experience. It's a powerful group effect. It's a community, really. And we support and love each other and share, again, through our own experience, how we're waking up. So, and that ripples out into systems, into transforming healthcare and education and government. So it really starts with us. So join us there if you can. Again, zdogmd.com/supporters. And I'm so grateful to have you with us.